This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lefrak. The air finally has a bite in it, and many mountains around the state have gotten some snow. That means ski season is just around the corner. So today on the show, we're going to be looking at how the nationwide staffing shortage is affecting Vermont's ski industry. But first, a new report came out this week called the Vermont Climate Assessment, and it shares in detail how Vermont will be affected by climate change. One of the areas that it focuses on is Vermont's economy, including our topic for today, the ski industry. Abigail Giles is a VPR producer and reporter who's focused on the environment, and she has read through this report and is here with us to share her takeaways. Hi, Abigail.
Hey, Michaela.
So, all right, we know, you and I know, that climate change is not new news. It is happening, and it's happening fast. So what do we learn in this report that is new?
Yeah, so climate change is happening faster in Vermont than we previously thought, even a few years ago. And Vermont is on average now almost 2 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it was in the year 1900. So something that was really striking to me was that on a human scale, this report was able to say, you know, we're seeing this change by the decade. Ice out is happening earlier and earlier. We're seeing fewer very cold days even than in the 1960s or the 1980s. And Vermont's climate is already warming faster than the global average. So by the end of the century, if we do nothing about emissions, it could be 10 to 16 degrees Fahrenheit warmer here on average. And even if the world does cut emissions, we're probably looking at 8 degrees of warming.
Oh, those are sobering statistics. And it makes me think of Vermont's economy and how dependent many parts of the industry are on the environment and on that cold weather. So how exactly will climate change affect the ski industry in particular?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Michaela. Warming is happening fastest in the winters in Vermont. So since 1960, winter temperatures have risen 2.5 times faster than the average annual temperatures here. Vermont also sees now an average of 21% more precipitation than in 1900. But as we go forward, we're going to get that in more sort of boom or bust cycles of heavy rain and drought. So overall, we're going to keep having water. That's something that's pretty key and good. Not everywhere can say that. And if we keep emissions low, there's a chance that some of those extra several inches of precipitation we're expected to get every year could fall as snow.
That's interesting. Okay, so just to clarify, Vermont is getting more precipitation than it was 120 years ago. And our choice now, I guess, is a way to put it, is you know, do we lower emissions and make sure that precipitation is snow? And if we don't, it becomes rain?
Yeah, I think so. I think we're almost certainly going to see more rain. You know, we're on track for some warming no matter what we do, but there's a chance that we could, you know, get a few powder days in there as well.
Okay. All right. So are mountains in certain parts of the state going to be affected more than others by climate change?
This is true broadly when we look at impacts of climate change in Vermont, but southern Vermont, and in particular, the report called out southeastern Vermont as a place that is seeing many impacts first. Winter precipitation in Vermont actually increased over the last century, but it's declined since the 1970s. And the report really said, you know, smaller mountains, mountains at lower elevations, mountains in the lower part of the state, those places are going to have some challenges moving forward when it comes to managing their snow. In fact, it called out 2 resorts in Vermont, Suicide Six and Cochrane's, as examples of places that might need to get innovative with solutions.
And that's something that we're going to talk about later in the hour with our guests from the ski industry. And speaking of these mountains and Vermont's tourism economy, skiing is a major staple of that economy. So in your opinion, after reading this report, do you think skiing can still be a viable industry in the next 50 years?
You know, Michaela, this really struck me as a place where scientists are saying, you know, we can make choices now that could still change things. So really, the report says the answer to this question depends on whether we see a high emission scenario versus a low emission scenario. So high emission scenario, that's kind of broadly, you know, business as usual if we continue as we have. if we don't curb emissions. And if we head on that track globally, the report predicts that skiing will no longer be economically viable for most, if not all, mountains in Vermont by 2080.
Wow.
That's not that far from now. If we look at the lower emission scenario, the report actually says it's very probable that skiing will remain viable for most resorts through the end of the century. So that's promising. Mm-hmm. Some studies have said that ski conditions in Vermont are likely to fare better than in neighboring states. So there's a growth opportunity there. We could have a captive market in New York and Boston and beyond, which is not true now. We compete with other states for skiers. Vermont is in fact poised better than most places in the country to retain snow. But that's really, again, dependent on those emission scenarios.
And is that because of the geography of Vermont?
That's a really good question. I would put that to one of the climate scientists that compiled this report. But my understanding is that it's really about, you know, where we're located and where we're likely to still have snow. And I wouldn't delve too deeply into that, but that seems like it would make sense to me.
Sure. And right now, you know, we're talking about this climate report against the backdrop of world leaders meeting in Scotland for the UN's climate summit. They're discussing, you know, kind of yet again what to do about climate change. But a lot of people are saying, you know, they're gathering to do too little, too late. So do the authors of the report include any, I don't know, specific action items for Vermonters that you think that, you know, our listeners could kind of take on to feel like they are doing something to change the course of climate change?
You know, I think the purpose of this report was really to provide policymakers and also everyday Vermonters with good data and information to make decisions to plan for the future, both, you know, practically in terms of their business investments, but also for policy so we can adapt. One thing that I think is really important to point out is that, you know, these global emission scenarios that are called out in the climate assessment, Vermont can't change the course alone. We still need national and international policy to get there. But last year, Vermont did commit to reducing greenhouse gas emissions to 26% below 2005 levels by 2025, with much bigger reductions to follow. And the State Climate Council is working on a climate action plan that will detail how we're going to get there. That's due December 1st. And there are things that we can do. Transportation was called out in this report as the biggest source of emissions in Vermont. Vermonters drive more miles per capita than anyone else in the Northeast, sometimes to ski mountains. But the plan really says, you know, regardless, Vermont needs to start investing in warm weather activities. And I think if consolidation in the ski industry continues, you know, Alterra and Vail, their resorts may be poised to be more resilient. But those are big companies. They have a lot of buying power to drive the industry in a greener direction. So it'll be interesting to see where they go.
Well, Abigail, you brought up transportation, and I do want to note that we're going to have Representative Peter Welch on the program tomorrow, who will be talking about the big infrastructure package that is on President Biden's desk. And that includes you know, millions and millions of dollars in funding for different transportation projects right here in Vermont, many of which have an eye on sustainable transportation. So I encourage our listeners to tune in tomorrow if they want to hear more about those topics. Abigail, anything else from this report that you want to draw our attention to before we let you go?
You know, I think when we look at the ski industry, it's a really big driver of our economy. And I think that this is one place where we still have time to act. And the report really said, if we don't act, this is what will happen. But if we do, there's an opportunity to save skiing in Vermont. So I think that was a big takeaway.
All right. Abigail Giles, thank you so much for joining Vermont Edition.
Thanks so much for having me.
After the pandemic put a damper on last year's ski season, Vermont ski resorts are gearing up for a much busier winter. But many resort managers can't find enough workers right now to staff their lodges and their lifts. They're scrambling to hire enough staff to open properly. Joining us today is JJ Toland, the communications director for J Peak Ski Resort. Hi, JJ.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
We're also joined today by Nina Keck, a reporter at VPR who has been reporting on the ski industry. Welcome, Nina.
Hi, Michaela.
And last but not least, we have Molly Mahar. She is the president of Ski Vermont, a nonprofit dedicated to maintaining the health of the state's ski industry. Welcome, Molly.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Now, before we turn to this ski season and the staffing shortage, Molly, I would love for you to address a little bit of what we talked about at the start of the show, how climate change is impacting winters in Vermont and therefore the ski industry. So how do you think the industry is going to look in a few decades' time?
Well, certainly very concerning that changes are happening faster than previously predicted, and particularly that Vermont is warming faster than the global average. You know, what we do here in Vermont, as Abigail said, is very important, and we're moving in the right direction with the Global Warming Solutions Act and the coming the Climate Council's report. But what we do as a country and a world are really critical as well, and it's frustrating that we're not moving ahead fast enough. You know, it's tough for me to predict how things are going to look, you know, in a couple of decades, but our industry is certainly doing climate work in several areas. The work that the ski areas are doing and continue to do to increase their operational efficiencies and sustainability, often working with Efficiency Vermont, which has been a great resource for our industry, advocacy with the National Ski Areas Association and other state associations and other businesses in Washington for action on climate. And that's really where I think we need to see some action. And I know that our congressional delegation here in Vermont gets that. But unfortunately, some of the other ones don't. And we, you know, it's frustrating that we're not moving faster and forward on some of these things. You know, supporting the climate legislation at the state level, which we have done, and asking the skiing public to make their voices heard with their senators and representatives.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's turn now to the short-term future and this upcoming ski season. And listeners, we would love to hear from you in this conversation. We're curious if you didn't ski last year because of COVID and are gearing up to get a season pass this year, or perhaps you are looking for a job at a ski resort or have worked at one in the past. You can call us at 800-639-2211 or email us at vermontedition@vpr.org. Now, Nina, you've been doing a lot of reporting on the staffing shortages at Vermont ski resorts. So what exactly is the issue?
Well, I think like a lot of businesses that are trying to hire people right now, it's tough. And what people should understand about the ski industry is it's super labor intensive. So they are ramping up right now. Killington goes from around 500 employees during the summer to roughly 2,000 midwinter. Sugarbush says they typically hire 500 to 600 additional staff right about now. And they need a variety of positions, everything from snowmakers and groomers who might be working the overnight shift to lift operators, ski patrollers, instructors, cooks, bartenders, and you've got wait staff and housekeeping, overall maintenance, parking. I mean, the list goes on and on. And, you know, with the current worker shortage, a lot of resorts are saying that they're not going to make their quotas by anywhere 20 to 30% is what I've been hearing, although that could change in the next few weeks. Now is when they're trying to do as much hiring as they can. So it's just, there's a lot of positions they need to fill. And as we've heard reporting over the last several weeks and months, a lot of people have left the workforce in Vermont. I think the estimates were around 30,000 people left the workforce in Vermont because of COVID-19, and they haven't come back. So that leaves a very competitive market for folks, and the ski resorts are fighting for them.
Right. And you know, we've been hearing for a long time about this worker shortage and how it's affecting all different industries. So in your understanding, what are the reasons for the shortage? Where did these workers go? Oh, sounds like we've lost Nina. We're going to work on getting her back. So Molly, let's turn to you. Where do ski resorts usually turn to find staff?
Well, certainly we like to hire local people as much as we can. Over the past decade, we've seen more use of international workers, more recruitment of international workers, and those are the the H-2B temporary workers, and then the J-1, which are the student cultural exchange workers. And there has been quite a demand on that workforce this year as well. With the H-2B workers, there are seasonal caps, and typically the winter seasonal cap either doesn't get hit or it gets hit typically toward the end of the calendar year. And this year we hit the cap, I don't know, maybe two weeks ago. Hmm. So almost a full 8 weeks before we usually hit it. So that just goes to show you the great demand on that workforce. But, you know, with international workforce, you need to have housing for those folks as well. And we're even seeing people that, you know, want to work domestically. They're looking for housing as well. You know, people that may want to come up just for the season and work at a ski area are asking about housing options. And so housing has been a critical piece of it.
And I want to dive a bit more into housing in just a moment, but it looks like we do have Nina back. So Nina, while you were offline, we were talking about where workers typically do come from. And you had brought up the fact that, you know, Vermont has lost a lot of workers since the start of the pandemic. So in your understanding, where did they go?
Yeah, everybody's asking that question. And I think there's a number of reasons. Some folks just did life changes. I think of that 30,000 that I mentioned, about 10,000 of them, so almost a third, chose the past year to retire. They just said, you know, enough's enough. I don't want to do any more Zoom meetings or learn a new technology. And they opted to leave the workforce or retire. Other folks have had difficulty finding childcare. Still others may be worried about the health ramifications. I mean, our COVID numbers are, again, climbing right now. Some folks I know have folks in their family that might be medically compromised. So going back into a job like bartending or working in a restaurant might make them nervous. And then, you know, I come back again to that housing issue. That is a tough nut. Let's say you're recently graduated from high school, you've been living at home for the pandemic, you want to move across state to take a job at a ski resort, you can't find an apartment or housing. It's just, so there are a lot of different issues at play that I think are kind of creating the perfect storm, so to speak, and it's made it tough.
If you have worked at a ski resort in the past, we would love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 800-639-2211. Now, JJ, I'd love for you to weigh in here. What has the experience been like at J-Peak with hiring workers for this season?
It really has picked up over the last 2 weeks to a point right now where we're seeing a couple dozen people be what's called onboarded and loaded into the system to get ready for the season. But it absolutely is a challenging environment right now. Nina brings up a good point in that I do think there's still an element of fear. You know, if you're a bartender, you know, being on the other side of a bar across from someone who you don't know what state they came from or, you know, what belief they might hold around vaccination, it can, you know, there's an element of fear there. But what we learned from last year, you know, a typical full season for us is 1,200 workers. We never got north of 460 last year. And that was a result of operational changes that we had to make, just one around spaces and distancing and whatnot. But what that taught us was a lot of efficiency in terms of how we look at our operating plan, how many hours a certain facility might be open. Like you take our water park, which was open for 12 hours a day, you know, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., and that requires a certain amount of staffing. When we start to look at how that facility is used and how people flow through it, it doesn't need to be open for 12 hours. Last year, I mean, it had to be shut down, not altogether, but we couldn't put more than 75 people in there. But it made us look at the way people used it, when they used it, how they used it. So when we look at staffing, you know, we're starting to look at it through a lens of we might not need 1,200 people. And it's a, you know, it's great timing for that kind of revelation because of the environment right now around staffing. But we're able to adapt to the current landscape through looking at hours and how we use different buildings.
Right. Nina, you've talked to a lot of different folks at a lot of different ski resorts across the state. How many employees do ski resorts generally need for this season? Can you give us a bit of a scale of how large this workforce typically is and how short they might be this winter?
Well, I think Killington told me that they go from anywhere from like 400 to 500 during the summer up to closely 2,000 midwinter. Sugarbush says they typically hire 500 to 600 additional staff for the winter ski season. I think it varies a lot. And as JJ mentioned, this year especially, they're trying to refigure those numbers. And one of the things I've been hearing resorts tell me over and over is just cross-training is becoming key. And folks that might work the parking area early in the morning might segue to childcare or retail or busing tables in the afternoon. Even if you're working in the accounting department, you might end up on a busy weekend day or during the week, during the holidays, fit ski boots. So I think a lot of people are being expected to do a lot more jobs. And that might, I think, fit into to what JJ was talking about, just being flexible and rethinking how people work at a ski resort.
Right. Let's go now to Joe in Montgomery. Joe, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello.
Hi there. What's your question or comment?
Oh, you're asking why people aren't going to work at the ski areas.
Do you have a guess? Why do you think?
No, I know why they don't go back to work at the ski areas. I worked at Jay Peak for 16 years. I just heard a guy on there, he was from Jay Peak, talking about a bunch of different stuff. And people don't go back to work at the ski areas because ski areas treat their employees very poorly and they don't want to pay them.
Okay, so you think that low pay is the reason why it's difficult for ski resorts to hire right now. JJ, at Jay Peak, I would love for you to respond to that. Have you had to look at salary and perhaps make it more competitive in order to hire and retain workers?
Absolutely. Recruiting is a piece of the puzzle, but retention is a larger piece of it because, you know, one of the reasons we're not in full-blown panic mode around staffing is because we've done a great job at retention in terms of, especially over the last three seasons, bringing hourly wages up, bringing salaries up, giving people end-of-season bonuses, bringing in other perks like free food, expanding, you know, family access to the Hill, because Joe's right, it's tough. And, you know, especially up at Jay Peak, when, you know, we fell into corporate receivership, 2016, I think at this point, one of the opportunities that whole experience gave us was it allowed us to look at our wage scales, and we did a complete overhaul that took us about two seasons, but we realized that, you know, we weren't paying a good wage. And we began addressing it immediately in terms of bringing salaries and wages up anywhere from 25 to 32%. And it's something that we continue to address. COVID season kind of put a little bit of a pause on it because we had to ratchet things down, but it is something that is front and center for us.
And Molly, what do you think at resorts across the state has salary increases and, you know, signing bonuses, has that been something that more and more resorts are having to look at with a critical eye?
Yes, I think the areas that I have talked to, which are most of them, you know, they're all paying above minimum wage at this point. And I am hearing that not so much maybe signing bonuses, but referral bonuses for their existing employees. And in some cases, for community members as well, if community members can refer someone for employment. But yeah, we're definitely seeing that pressure on wages up in this competitive environment. And this year, you know, we have several areas in the state that have set a minimum wage of $15 an hour at this point.
Now, if you're
Can I jump in?
Yes, please, Dinah.
I was talking to Adam White, who is a spokesman for Vail Resorts, which owns Akemo and Stowe and Mount Snow in Vermont. And he was saying that throughout the whole corporation, Vail has had to bump up resort pay And it's been the single biggest preseason investment Vail has made to pay for these salary increases. Because when you pay the base wage more, you don't want to anger the people that have been there several years. And so, you know, all of the wages have kind of had to trickle upwards. But I just was surprised that, you know, for Vail, the salary increase was just a huge, huge amount of money this year, preseason-wise.
And yeah, I mean, if I just echo Nina's, that retention piece cannot be overlooked. I know a lot of, you know, we've talked about recruiting and signing bonuses, but you have to keep your people. You have to keep those who stayed in the fight with you. I mean, last year, at the end of what was arguably our worst and most challenging year, we gave out six figures bonuses to everybody of just saying thank you for staying with us.
That was six figures cumulatively.
Correct.
Okay. We're not giving out $100,000 bonuses to individual workers.
Cumulatively, being able to recognize, you know, the 462 people that stayed in the fight with us and knowing that, you know, everybody was slinging 12 to 15 hour shifts, you have to acknowledge that. I mean, it was a tremendous effort on everyone's part. If you don't, you lose them. And then you're behind another eight ball going into this year.
Let's go now to Rob in Bennington. Rob, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for the conversation. Being relatively new to Vermont, I understand that these ski resorts all kind of have developed over a period of time. And in that time, the economy of the valleys that used to benefit from the ski mountains has diminished considerably. And so these ski mountains, by being, for want of another word, greedy, by wanting all of it to themselves at the top of a mountain, they have to understand that people have to drive at 11:30 at night if they're going to have a service job, and that's worth $25 to $30 an hour plus tip right now. And if they're not willing to pay that, then close your restaurants and bars down and give us some business down in the valley, because that's where it used to be, and they get tax breaks on top of it. So why are we even so concerned about the ski mountains when we need the economy for the people who live here and work here and have their kids in school here down in the valleys? We need those ski people to send the business back to where it belongs, to the Vermonters who live here and make Vermont what it is.
Rob, thank you for your comment. And I would actually like to hear from everyone about this note. But first, Nina, let's start with you, because you've been reporting on the ski industry for many years now. I'm curious how you see that interplay working between these ski resorts at the top of the mountain and the communities that surround them.
Well, I would push back a little bit, because I think for communities like Rutland and those surrounding the Killington-Pico ski areas, there's a lot of trickle-down economic value that comes from the skier visits, the folks that buy second homes, the folks that come up every weekend. They do definitely frequent bars and restaurants and retail stores close to the mountain, but a lot of them do come down to the valleys, as the caller mentioned. And so there's always a little bit of a push and pull there, but, you know, the grocery store in Rutland, I always see shoppers dressed, you know, in ski gear with out-of-state plates. So I think there is a lot of benefit to the businesses that cater to these mountains outside of the actual resort communities.
And Molly, weigh in here, please, for us. How do you see these resorts around Vermont working with communities, ideally, to support one another? Is that something that you think that the industry needs to work on, or is it doing pretty well overall, in your opinion?
I think we're doing that already. I mean, the ski industry brings $950 million in direct skier spending into the state every year. It's almost a third of the tourism spending in the state. And many of the ski areas are located in rural areas of the state. And so that skier traffic is driving traffic to a number of businesses, not just in the hospitality industry, but as Nina mentioned, you know, convenience stores, grocery stores, gas stations, retail stores, and things like that. So it has a big effect on the economy of the state, and particularly in these rural areas where many of the ski areas are located. And about two-thirds of the spending that comes in is spent actually off the mountain in these other communities. So it's important to know.
And Jay, what's your, or excuse me, JJ, what is your experience with this at Jay? I actually was just up in that area on Monday and went around to a couple of different, you know, markets and local stores around Jay Peak. And, you know, everyone there was saying that they're really excited for the ski season to start bringing in those customers.
Yeah, I mean, we're a little bit unique up at Jay in that we don't have a large town near us. You know, the town to the east is only, I think, 400 plus people, and the town to the west is maybe 500. But you have those gas stations, the pizza shops, and the smaller pubs that this I know just from the summer and even last winter, you couldn't get a seat in those places because, you know, with so much to, not so much to offer, but, you know, only a few restaurants up here on campus, we push people off the hill. We encourage them to go to those other places because, frankly, if you're up here for a 4 to 6 night stay, you know, you want to go out and try something different. And you look at a place like the Belfry restaurant, which is down towards the Montgomery side, it's only a 60, 65 seat restaurant, but you couldn't get a seat in that place this summer. And it was a lot of out-of-state plates. You know, I live in Morrisville, and I can't tell you that it was impossible to, not impossible, it was impossible in a good way to navigate those roads and those restaurants down there because, you know, if you look at it, it was a lot of white plates, a lot of out-of-state tags. And it's been like that even through the beginning of stick season now. So I know once the travel restrictions got lifted, the amount of inbound traffic from, you know, the New England area has been tremendous.
Right. And I do want to talk a bit more about those travel restrictions and the changes with Canadian tourism in just a moment. But first, let's hone back in on the worker shortage and what these resorts are doing to try to attract and retain workers. Now, Nina, I know you've talked to a number of different folks around the region who work at ski resorts. What are you hearing about what they're doing to attract workers?
Oh, pretty much anything they can. I think we heard a little bit about the referral bonus. I heard at a couple of resorts that if staff members can get a friend to work at the staff, they could get, you know, $150 to $200 as a referral bonus. I've heard of, you know, discounted child care, more flexible hours, signing bonuses. You name it, I think they're trying it. They're trying to be as flexible as they can.
Right. And I believe you talked to somebody up at Killington, right, about trying this attempt to reach out to folks in the area to hire them. Is that right?
That is right. And you know, I was chatting with Mike Salamano, the president of Killington and Pico Ski Resorts, just a couple of days ago. And, you know, he was talking about what they're trying to do to encourage staff. I think the colder weather may be helping. But, you know, as we've been hearing in this discussion, I think ski resort officials are being flexible. They're trying to roll with the punches. But as you can hear in this clip from Mike Salamano, there's definitely frustration. And when I asked him point blank, you know, what seems to be working with hiring, this is what he had to say.
Nothing. You know, we're still really struggling in a lot of areas. I mean, we brought in, typically we're bringing in 300 internationals this year. We tried to bring in a little more, and it looks like we're going to have less than normal because some of them, because the U.S. hit the cap earlier. So we're now scrambling to try to find other people. But in the local market, there's just nobody applying. We go to job fairs, and there's more staff at the job fairs than there are people coming to apply. I mean, a whole job fair for like an area like Rutland, and they'll have like 10 people show up.
That is bleak, Nina.
Employers.
Right? So you can hear the frustration there. I think he's looking at being flexible, and he didn't sound too worried. I think he's going to figure out what he needs to do to be, you know, opening all the lifts that he can, just as they had to be flexible last year with COVID. But I think, you know, it must be frustrating.
And what is working for people?
Well, I think as he said, not a whole lot. But when I talked to Stephanie Gorin, she was a spokesperson or is a spokesperson for Smuggler's Notch. She pointed to a couple of things that are helping there.
One is when the snow first fell about a week and a half ago, that was when we saw an increase in applications. That's when people start thinking about snow and skiing and the outdoors in the winter. The second thing has been social media. Social media, putting out posts showing what you can do here at the resort has been fantastic. It's, you know, you put a link to where people can apply, and that has worked wonders for us.
And I thought it was interesting, Michaela. Stephanie mentioned how now that the weather's changing and the snow's starting to fly, and when we look up to the mountains, we can see some white caps. That seems to get people excited to apply. And it's almost the same as during the winter when there's a snowstorm in Boston and New York. That's when we see the skier visits jump up. So maybe that's going to help.
Now let's go to David in Montreal. David, you are on the air. Go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, David. Thanks for joining us from Canada. What's your question or comment?
Yeah. I'm 56 and I've retired from my job but the best job I ever had was working at a ski hill in the Laurentians, Grey Rocks, or next to Mont Tremblant. And I thought about going back to working at a ski hill, and I wondered, what's the wage like? I mean, can I get a place to stay while I work there, or what kind of jobs do we have? I mean, I love ski hills.
JJ, let's pose this one to you. What kind of jobs are available? What wages are you offering? Let's sell David on it.
David, go to jpeakresort.com/jobs. We have plenty of positions right now that pay a wage really across the spectrum, depending what you're willing to do. Bartend, drive a cat, ski patrol, really runs the gamut. And we did, I want to say this will be the third year that we had removed a number of our condos from the rental pool and dedicated them to employee housing. So we do have housing available. So come check us out.
And Molly, can you elaborate on this housing issue? Because I know it's been a topic of conversation for many people who are interested in working at these resorts, but don't have a place to live.
Yeah, many ski areas are working on increasing the amount of housing they have. And as JJ just mentioned, they've done a good job with that up at Jay Peak. I know Killington has just added some housing, and I think most of the ski areas are looking at, you know, older buildings that were functioning maybe as an inn or a hotel in the past, being able to either lease or buy those types of facilities, and then also looking at building new facilities as well. It's definitely become a much bigger deal in the East. It used to, you know, for a while it was a sort of a Western problem, and it's definitely been exacerbated by the pandemic here in Vermont. We know that the real estate market has been pretty hot, and people have been buying up properties, and we also have short-term rentals. Some people are using their properties for short-term rentals instead of renting longer, for a season or for a year. So there's a lot of pressure on housing right now, and the ski areas are definitely aware of that and working on solutions for it. But I think it's a statewide issue for our workforce here in the state, and so, you know, we're looking forward to engaging on that topic and trying to be part of that solution.
Now, if you're somebody who is interested in working in the ski industry or has worked in it in the past and has struggled to find housing, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you're someone who is thinking about putting, you know, a spare property or a room up to house workers in the ski industry, we'd love to hear from you too. You can give us a call at 800-639-2211. Let's go now to Merlin in Bristol. Merlin, you are on the air.
Hi, me.
Hi, can you hear us?
Merlin, yes. Yes. You just kind of grazed the edge of what I was going to bring up, which is I lived in a Colorado ski town that was and is still being basically more and more VRBOs are really filling in all the side streets and everything. And there's really nobody that can afford to come work the supermarkets, work the ski hill, work the area. And I was wondering if there's any kind of anybody looking at this from a legislative standpoint to say, hey, listen, we can't do this. It's a broken model of diminishing returns. And maybe someone could say, hey, we just can't do this. We have to put a cap on the VRBO market, because I get it. People are just greedy. So anyway.
Yeah, that's a great question. And Molly, I'm curious, is this something that you have been pushing the state legislature on to help out with?
Well, it's sort of a double-sided issue. There is a rental bill that was in the legislature and was passed by the legislature this past session and was vetoed by the governor. And this bill would not limit the amount of short-term rentals. However, it would create a registry that all rental units, whether you're renting a unit year-round or if on a short-term basis, you would need to register that with the state. I believe the fee was $35. And so that would help us really get a handle on the data in terms of what are we really looking at in terms of short-term rentals and the housing market. And so I believe that bill will be back up for more work this next session. And, you know, that's something that we're absolutely paying attention to.
Let's go down to Ray in Montgomery. Ray, you are on the air. What's your question or comment?
Hi, my name's Ray. Am I on the air?
Yes, you are. Go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to point out that I ski out west quite a bit in Western Canada, and now the ski areas in British Columbia and I believe Alberta are going to require that all skiers are fully vaccinated. They have to have proof of that in order to buy lift tickets or go in the base facilities. And I understand this year that the Vermont ski areas aren't going to have any spacing in the lift lines. You're not going to be able to ride a chair solo, which I was allowed to do last year, and they're going to simply use the full capacity of all the lifts for the skiers. And I would think it'd be a lot of skiers would be more comfortable knowing that the people they're riding a lift with are fully vaccinated or riding in the JP tram, where I'm a season's pass holder. So I'll take the answer off the air.
Thank you, Ray. JJ, what types of precautions has Jay Peak put in place to keep skiers and staff safe, if any?
We've followed the state's guidance pretty much to a T. You know, we followed them last year with social distancing and masking. We actually created a specific program called the EverClean program, and the physical extension of that were wellness ambassadors who patrolled the lift lines, patrolled the public spaces, made sure everybody was adhering to the masking mandate and the distancing. I think what we learned coming out of the season last year, and I think the science has held, was that outdoor transmission of the virus is virtually nil. So I don't see the governor reinstituting a mask mandate for outdoors or lift lines. We are looking at the tram to see what we learned from last year in terms of just the way it flowed better with less people on it. But we are asking frontline staff to mask, and we still provide the EverClean stations to guests so they can work to their comfort levels in terms of masking and hand washing and hand sanitizing.
And Nina, I'm curious what you've heard about this. Has COVID concerns about the spread of the virus been a topic of conversation for the folks at ski resorts that you've spoken to?
It has. I think just trying to figure out ongoing, since this keeps evolving, and just trying to stay abreast of the latest, especially right now with COVID cases rising. I think what JJ was talking about is probably what we're going to be seeing, folks just being somewhat careful, masking probably indoors when you're in a restaurant or in a bar warming up, that sort of thing, but masks not required outside as much, you know, not on the chairlifts, and more of a back to normal feel, I think, to some extent, as much as normal as we can talk about this year. I mean, nothing's really normal, but I don't see it as different as last year, for instance. I think a lot of resorts have talked to me about really trying to get a little bit back to normal in the feel of their operations, if that makes sense.
Right, right. Well, let's go now to Kevin in Wolcott. Kevin, you are on the air. Go ahead. Kevin, are you with us?
Yes, hello.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
What's your question or comment?
My comment is, you know, my hometown is Breckenridge, Colorado, and I spent a lot of time working in restaurants and worked my way up through Ski Patrol, a large Colorado resort. And I just wanted to comment that a lot of these jobs, they simply just don't pay. And a lot of times these resorts, they will tell you that the benefit is the privilege of having a ski pass. But at this point, even some of these jobs like Ski Patrol, mountain safety, lift operations, absolutely, who are doing heavy lifting all day long. These are dangerous jobs. These are jobs that cause injuries. These are jobs that require very specialized skills. And when you're looking at pay that just doesn't commensurate with what the rents are, with that doesn't meet what the raising prices are, people just don't want to do them, especially when there's risk of injury or harm to their physical self.
Well, we only have about 30 seconds left, but JJ, I'd love for you to respond to Kevin's comment.
Yeah, it is a tough industry. I mean, I spent a number of years in a Western ski town, bumping chairs in the day and bartending at night and living with 8 other people. And times have changed.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the rents in ski towns, they have gone up, you know, quite a bit, especially with COVID and people buying homes and then charging, say, 30% more than what they were 2 years ago. But up at Jay Peak, we've just addressed that head on by just simply removing condo complexes from our rental pool and offering them to employees at a fair rate.
All right. JJ Toland from Jay Peak Resort, thanks so much for joining us, as well as VPR reporter Nina Keck and Molly Mahar, the president of Ski Vermont. That is all the time that we have for our show today. And before we wrap up, my co-host Connor Cyrus and I just want to honor and thank the armed forces and their families, because today, of course, is Veterans Day. And we here at Vermont Edition are just so thankful to the service members who have made enormous sacrifices to keep us all safe. So thank you from everyone here at Vermont Edition.